We are back with episode 394 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What's up? Alex Pardo here, bringing you another masterclass. And I got an absolute stud, a rock star in every sense of the word, Brenton Hess out of the Maryland market. As you're about to hear, Brenton is 26 years old, got involved in this business at 19, so about 7 years ago, and has amassed a rental portfolio of, he's got 44 units in his portfolio. He's done well over 100 flips and is currently coaching 23 people locally on building a successful real estate investing business. And more, I think more importantly, and what I truly believe you're going to get out of this podcast, you know, we talk about certain things like borrowing other people's confidence, going back on the offense, not the defense. One of the most painful experiences and lessons he's learned, you know, Brenton shares a very personal story about how he just got in business with the wrong person, trusted them but didn't verify, and quickly found himself in well into six figures worth of debt, and how, you know, the shiny object syndrome almost got him away from getting out of that hole. And so Brenton, I'm so blessed and fortunate that he's one of our Ascend members, and just somebody who's just got the right perspective and the right insight. He's a phenomenal coach. We talk about the importance of asking the right questions, addition by subtraction, and just so much meat and content that I think you're going to get out of this episode. So I'm excited for you to hear this one. Brenton Hess, what is going on, my brother? How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed. I'm so looking forward to this. You might be... I'm thinking, man, so we're nearing 400 episodes. You might be the youngest guest I've had, and probably you're very well accomplished. Let's just leave it at that. 26 years old, huh?
Yep, 26 for another month. So looking forward to holding the reins until somebody else smarter and younger comes along and takes my title from you.
That is so crazy, man. 26 years old. So I got in this business at 25, and it's incredible to have... You and I have known each other for, I don't know, probably 6, 7, 8 months now. You being a part of Ascend and just knowing your story and how quickly you've grown. It's been really impressive, man. I think where I'd like to start the conversation is 26 years old. This is a very broad, general question. How the heck have you been able to amass a rental portfolio of 44 units? Correct me if I'm wrong. You've done well over 100 deals. You're successfully coaching other people in your market. You know, people come to you. I constantly see you out there on social, you know, speaking in front of pretty big crowds, teaching people what you've done. At 26 years old, how did you even get to this point?
So I guess I'll take it back. When I was super young, I was 11 or 12, my parents started a Keller Williams franchise. And back when it was Keller Who, not many people knew about them. They started with six agents. My mom was CEO. And this was in 2006, 2007. So... or 2005, 2006. So, you know, what happened right after they launched, crash hit. And I watched them and their work ethic and barely survive and take a second mortgage on the house. And my mother's been the CEO and my father's been the broker since day one. And they amassed being one of the largest real estate brokerages now, 15 years later. But I kind of was born and raised around real estate. So even though I went and got a 9-to-5 at the government, while I was going to school for accounting and ended up getting my master's, I was going down the corporate. So any of those who are listening who have been had a 9-to-5 and have contemplated jumping or how do I do both hustles, that's kind of where I was. And then I got my real estate license at 19. I went to my parents and said, hey, what can you teach me this real estate thing? Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, there's a lot to learn. What do you want to learn? And I said, well, what would you do if you were me? And they said, we would do what we never did. And what do you think that was?
Take out a second mortgage, do everything they're doing, like all the things they had to do that they're hoping you don't have to go through those trials and tribulations.
Exactly. And they have a job. So they said, we wish we would have invested.
Okay.
So I said, all right, well, how do you do that? And they said, I don't know. We've never done it. They invested in the brokerage, but that was about it.
Yeah.
And they work really hard and that was their sole income for a little while. So anyways, I ended up walking around asking for others like, hey, like who wants to flip houses? Cause, I didn't know how to do it and I didn't have any money. In fact, I had college debt at that point. I had 9-to-5 and I just was newly licensed. And I came across a guy with a lot of money and he had not a lot of time. And he had hundreds of thousands liquid and he wanted to flip houses. And I was the opposite. I had a lot of time, not a lot of money. I had college debt. So that's when we paired up and we started flipping houses together. And that's kind of how I learned. Knowing what I know now, I'd go back and do things differently, which we can get into. However, that's kind of how it all started. Okay. And I eventually resigned from my 9-to-5, my government job, started doing investing full time. When I was on the Bigger Pockets podcast, they titled it How to Flip Your Way Out of College Debt.
Mm.
So my joke now is I flipped my way out of college debt and then I flipped my way into debt. And then I flip my way out of debt, and then I'm flipping my way to pay for a wedding now. So it's been kind of my bread and butter. But fast forward, I have 44 rental units. I flip full time, and I mentor and coach others to successfully flip their first three houses here locally.
Incredible, man. Well, there's so much to unpack there, but let me just kind of publicly acknowledge you. I don't think I mentioned this to you at our last Ascend retreat, but at one point I looked over to Steve, who coaches you, and I said, this kid is so sharp. He's so bright because the questions you were asking people and your ability to coach, whether you recognize it or not, to me is what it's impressive that you have 44 units and you flip a bunch of deals, but your ability to like ask questions and really help people is what jumped out at me, man. So I just want to publicly acknowledge you for, I don't know if that's a God-given gift that you have, but you have it. And so love the fact that now you've taken your knowledge and experience and you're helping others in your market. I think that's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm learning as I go. What I can tell you is having believed in hiring a coach my whole life, I have been a part of coaching masterminds and other coaches that have asked such great questions. And it led me to Ascend and I'm a proud member of it. And while I was sitting there, I was watching you and Steve and you guys set the bar high for questions. So whenever you guys asked a question, I was writing it down like, all right, I'm going to take that question and I'm going to rip off and duplicate that over here. So, you know, it's just being around those types of questioning. And I'm sure you're going to hit me with some good ones today on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, brother, so I want to take a few steps back here. When you partner with this guy, I find so many people partner with people for the wrong reasons. And it sounds like, you know, you kind of touched on what I'm hoping people heard is that you had a lot of time, not a lot of money. And it sounded like he had a lot of money, not a lot of time. Did you kind of figure things out as you went along, or was he kind of coaching you or mentoring you through the process, even though he didn't have a lot of time?
Yeah, he's a great guy, though he had never done this formally either. So I often say it was like the blind leading the blind.
Okay.
So I didn't have any construction background and I was super young. So I was going to let them handle the construction. I was kind of going to do more operations. And what happened was he went on vacation. My other partner went on vacation and I was stuck with the job. So I was stuck to figure it out. So I was meeting the subcontractors. We actually bought the house and nothing happened the first 2 weeks. Then we found ourselves painting it and we're looking at each other and I'm thinking, this cannot be how you flip houses. I didn't know of resources. I don't think podcasts were a thing back then. Certainly Bigger Pockets wasn't really like big or even launched. So It was rough. But then I was meeting the subcontractors. I was doing material runs. I was pricing them out, getting quotes. I was there every day. And then that's kind of how I learned.
Okay.
And I mentioned if I knew what I knew now, I'd go back and do things differently. And I don't care what age you are, what experience level you are. There's somebody there locally that knows your market who mm-hmm. has done what you want to do.
Right.
And instead of pairing with somebody who's comfortable, like I did, somebody who either could bail me out financially. So that actually held me back. So mm-hmm. by him having capital, I was held back because I didn't learn how to raise private capital. I didn't learn about leverage. I didn't learn about hard money lending.
Yep.
I didn't build those relationships and those muscles. So I felt like it held me back a little bit. And then also, I mean, I would rather do what I'd do. I just split the first three deals 50-50 and hire a coach and learn it the right way. And ultimately it's going to be less expensive than your partnership and the breakup. And then you should generate more revenue than the blind leading the blind. So
right.
there's a positive ROI on pairing with somebody who knows what they're doing
yeah.
rather than somebody who's comfortable.
I completely agree with you. And let me tell you, Brent, when I got started, so man, I think when I was 25 when I got started, I remember it wasn't until I was 27 that I actually decided to invest in myself. The first couple of years in business, brother, I always saw as coaches and mentors as an expense versus as an investment. And I think back to all the mistakes I made in the first couple of years and the brain damage I incurred. And now on the other side, I realized that that was so much more expensive than just hiring the right person. So if you can kind of speak to a little bit, obviously you're a successful coach yourself, but it seems like you saw the value early on, which is different than me. I didn't see that value early on. What was it about you getting into the business right off of the bat that you quickly realized, hey, I need to find the right people?
Yeah. It actually goes back to like when I'm, so I have 23 total coaching clients right now. And when I'm vetting those clients to see if they'd be a good fit for me and I can help them succeed, I'm actually looking for the same thing, which is the answer to your question. And that is, have they experienced enough pain mm-hmm. to the point where they're ready to just kind of submit, surrender, and take a hold of the model rather than being creative, because that's how we are when we're newer or less experienced and we have too much time.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually wasn't until I experienced enough pain by having the blind lead the blind and being in a partnership where I wasn't really learning and growing so much, when I was seeing other people surpass me and I was seeing other people jumping into these programs and coaches. And while there's a lot of shady ones out there, you find the right one, ultimately, that's when you're going to take it to the next level. So, in the very beginning, I didn't jump right in, just like you. I was stubborn. I saw it as an expense.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, I still have to correct myself, even as a coach, even paying for coaching. Like, I look at my accounting and books all the time, but then I have to really sit back and say, all right, what have I gotten out of this? Or mm-hmm. even more so, not even so much, what have you gotten out of it? It's who have I become? Or
there it is.
And then in addition to that, is what does it save me from? Like, whether it's like a trashed or horrible relationship, fights with the fiance, or it's even like save me from mistakes. Like, I almost bought a deal the other day, called Steve Cavanaugh up and he talked me out of it. And who knows, he could have saved me out of a massive loss.
Dude, I'm telling you, when I, at 26, I didn't have that mindset. When I got started, I was not thinking and I didn't have that perspective that you have. Where does that come from, man? Does that come from being around a family? You were kind of raised in the real estate space. Does it come from one of your parents, both? Was there someone that kind of really poured into you that planted that seed early on? Because I'm always fascinated by, you know, successful people. I always like to dig into their mindset mm-hmm. and figure out what makes them tick. I'm curious where that comes from for you.
Sure. No doubt my parents have been a big role. When Mackenzie, my fiance, and I, we've been going to premarital counseling.
So smart.
It's been something that was on our, when we were forced to create a vision and ascend. I actually have it up right here in front of me. So it's always in front of me and it's all bulleted and I'll be bringing it when I see you soon. And we put on there like premarital counseling so that we can be a little bit more proactive and do this when we're in good spirits rather than when we're in not so great spirits.
So smart.
So I say this because when we're sitting in premarital counseling, the counselor jumps right into your upbringing and your parents and their relationship and then their parents' relationships. because I guess you're modeling it and you're becoming them. So I do give my parents a ton of credit, and specifically my mother, she gave me a DISC assessment when I was 16 years old and
analyzed me,
and I don't know what the heck that stuff was. And she was then poured into me then. So no doubt they were kind of like the first form of coaching and mentoring. And then I became the know-it-all and said, all right, well, I don't need you guys. I'm going to go learn this investing thing, figure it out on my own. And then I
how'd that work out?
Yeah. And then I apologized.
Yeah, exactly. You bring up such a good point as far as being a know-it-all. So I just recently met with my coach, Steve Cook, and he actually challenged me. One of the things, we were analyzing our results and we were analyzing our numbers from the previous year, what we were doing from a marketing perspective. And he suggested we do like a couple of really old school marketing things. And I was so quick to dismiss it. And it came from a place of, oh, I already know that, I've already done that, it doesn't work. And yet it was just a few 2 millimeter shifts. And what came out of that conversation was, A, just because you know it, A, are you applying it and are you applying it effectively? And B, sometimes it's a slight tweak or a slight change. And I think that speaks to what you were sharing about coaching, is that sometimes when somebody says something with a particular nuance or from a different perspective, challenge your own thinking. Don't be so quick to do what I did, which was, oh, I know that and it doesn't work. But ask, well, how can it work? Or if this was going to work, like, so it's, I would love to hear your thoughts, Brent, because obviously you ask great questions. I mean, I've seen you in a room. Talk about the importance of asking yourself certain questions and not being a know-it-all, even if you think you quote unquote know it.
Yeah, I'm still figuring it out, but I can tell you that, rather than just having stage talk in your life where you're up there and you're acting like you got it all figured out and you're expert at with your own mindset, that's being in an atmosphere where people look up to me and expect me to be better than them. I just take that on as accountability. So I have to always remind myself and pause myself, like, is this something that I would say out loud in front of my own coaching clients? Mm. And that's like been my filter, and I still suck at it, but right there, terrible thing to say, but it is one of those things where you just learn and grow. And, pattern interrupts. And, I can tell you the amount of times I've wanted to quit or stop or change and pivot. And it's been as many as anyone. So, keeping yourself in it mentally is the only thing you can really got sometimes when you're struggling financially and other areas of your life.
Well, so you didn't even realize this, but you led me to where I was going. Talk to the person listening to this that's struggling financially. What keeps you going? What keeps you from stopping? What keeps you from quitting, I should say?
Sure. I like to borrow other people's confidence.
Borrow other people? I don't think I've ever heard it phrased that way.
Yeah. I stole that from Steve Gavinal.
I love it. I talk to the dude every day and he's never said that to me. I'm like, well, he's holding out on me, man.
I like to borrow other people's confidence. And specifically what I mean by that is the same way that like somebody who's never done a flip and they're coming to me, they might have everything they need to have in order to succeed. They might know everything they need to know in order to succeed. Mm-hmm. They just haven't succeeded yet. Mm. And somebody struggling financially, even myself at times, it's like, wow, I think I have what I need and I know what I need. I just haven't achieved it yet. So that's when coaching or mentoring, even if it's a significant other, they're going to believe in you more than you will at the times where you're struggling financially. So you borrow their confidence and you start implementing.
Yeah. Brother, I think as I hear you speak, what comes to mind for me immediately is, and I don't even know if you know this, but in 2000, it's kind of a long story. I think I've shared it a couple times in the podcast, but in 2009, I got an envelope from the IRS that's about half an inch thick. And long story short, I had like 3 years of back taxes first of all, my taxes weren't filed for a 3 year period, like 2006, 7, and 8. And I owed over six figures in back taxes and all that because I had done pretty well in the business early on. And I remember I hired a coach. And if it wasn't for that particular gentleman, who, by the way, is still a coach of mine today, I always said his belief in me was greater than the doubt I had in myself. And if it wasn't for that gentleman pouring into me, and sometimes I think when we're going through a tough situation, Brenton, maybe you can relate to this, brother, it's so easy to get overwhelmed. Kind of, you feel like you have a piano on your back that it's so hard to, it's almost like sometimes people get paralyzed and they're trying to think about getting out of that situation versus just breaking it down and saying, okay, what's the first thing I need to do in order to gain momentum? I'd love to kind of hear your perspective on that, because you alluded to before we started the podcast, one of the things I really want to get into is some of the mistakes you've made so that people can learn from that. When you make a big mistake or you're going through something, how do you just determine what's the first step versus looking at being over, allowing yourself to get overwhelmed by the situation?
Yeah, I have a great story. Just recently, as you know, I have a partnership that went really bad, and essentially this is what you open yourself up to when you do partnerships, especially if they're handshake agreements or with your best friend, like it is in my case. And he takes a lot of the, basically all the construction money we get up front and does other things with that rather than the construction of the property. So then we're left with an asset underwater and to the tune of hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
And while that's incredibly difficult, what I did was I actually took a step back and I said, you know what? I don't want to flip any more houses right now. I want to get out of this mess and figure this part out. And then I was challenged to go back on offense. And it's, so then I immediately said, well, instead of flipping, let me switch gears and double down on wholesaling. And then when we were at the Ascend Mastermind, everybody's like, well, why would you do that if you know how to flip houses? That's your bread and butter. And my excuse was, well, I don't want to take on more debt. I don't want to hold any more inventory. I don't want to put, like, at this point, I've had scars and I have PTSD from it because I'm in some tough situations with some tough properties I need to unload. And ultimately, I just ended up doubling down on what I know best. And fast forward, I have five flips right now, and all of which are easily going to get me out of that situation and propel forward. So it ended up having, like, to do what the thing I didn't want to do, which was doubling down on what I know the most, what's going to get me out of the hole. So I guess regardless if it's flipping or a different form of investing or even real estate, or even if it's a relationship driven activity, sometimes doubling down on what burned you, you just become better at it because of getting burned. And I can tell you, we can unravel the mistakes I've made. And I'm ultimately seeing even greater results doubling down on the thing I'm scared of doing, which was flipping at the time.
Isn't that amazing, Brent? Is that sometimes when I'm afraid of something or where there's fear associated with something, as long as it's healthy fear, I'm not talking about like jumping off a bridge. I mean, that's just stupid, right? That's healthy fear. But if there's something that makes me slightly uncomfortable, I've trained myself, Brent, to know that that's exactly what I need to lean into. And I love to hear your story because, first of all, it's incredible. And it's not surprising, by the way, to hear your story in October when we were at the retreat. So now we're recording this in February and you have five flips under your belt. That's going to really put you in a good position financially. Let's talk about some of the mistakes you've made that if you could rewind the clock, you wouldn't have made. What would you say is the most painful lesson you've learned up to this point in your investing career?
That's a nice and powerful question. I like it.
You like that, huh?
Mm-hmm. The most painful experience and lesson learned is no doubt managing other people's money. So when you're raising private capital or you're using other lenders, what happens is you have fiduciary duty to them. And I ended up trusting a little too much. So it's the classic, like, getting to business with your best friend, and then it's trusting them and that the work's getting done, and not tracking the money, because you have a partnership where one person does one thing, you do the other. So without a doubt, it's not even treat other people's money as if it's your own. It's treat other people's money better than if it's your own. And hard lesson to learn to be able to call these lenders and say, hey, here's the situation I'm in because of the mistakes I've made.
Yeah.
And I would rather it be my money than theirs. So therefore I need to treat theirs better than mine.
Right. Well, I mean, that speaks to the integrity, number one, and the character that you have. So I have two questions. The first is, what would you have done different? How would you have gone about, if we were hitting the rewind button, how would you have gone about vetting whoever you were getting into business with, or what systems or processes would you have put into place to make sure that this wouldn't have happened? And then I'll kind of just plant the seed for the second part of the question is, I would love to hear your thoughts and on why it's so important to face these challenges head on. You know, oftentimes what people do is, instead of making that uncomfortable, painful call to the lender and letting them know what's going on, they might run from it or dodge the calls. And that's happened to me so many times. So that's kind of the second question, is facing the challenge and the problem straight on and dealing with it versus kind of running from it and dodging people and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I've seen my parents get burned by an accountant who embezzled money and end up getting in a lot of trouble because he was striking checks to things that weren't really, yeah. So then they swore that they'd never, I mean, they watched the books. The way they watched them is much different that next time around. So mm-hmm. I swore that I would treat the money the same, as in it always runs through me and my eyes are always on it and I'm the one writing it, the checks. And then I ended up making the same mistake they did. And it's gut wrenching. So the one thing I would do differently is absolutely, you know, even if I was to get in a partnership, no matter what, I would be managing the money. The money flows through an account that I always have access to, that I'm always monitoring, and I'm not so much removing trust as much as I'm trusting and verifying.
Trust but verify.
Yeah. So there comes a point where we did a one flip together and we did it perfectly. And then we did another, we did it perfectly. And then did another and did it perfectly. And, you know, a couple years go by and you're just rocking and rolling and you just don't mm-hmm. expect something to happen. But you need to expect something's always going to happen.
Yeah.
And I didn't. So that's what I would change.
Okay.
And as far as tackling it head on, at first I didn't. At first I attempted to figure out how I can get out of the mess and the lenders not even find out. And then it carried such a heavy burden on me that when I did have the conversation with them, then I felt a ton better and they were willing to help and work with me and figure this out. Mm-hmm. So that is a lesson learned there too. I think if you have a feeling something's missing, like a conversation, then odds are the other person feels the same way that a conversation is missing.
It's great advice.
Well, have the conversation rather than sitting there and planting all these seeds in your head about how that conversation is going to go. So I wish I would have tackled that thing head on even earlier.
You know what has served me really well, Brendan, and I haven't always been so prudent about this, but I've learned the hard way, is when I know I need to have an uncomfortable conversation with someone because something went sideways or expectations weren't met. Just this morning, I had what I perceived to be an uncomfortable conversation with a key team member of mine. And by the end of the conversation, like, I felt so much better that I just had it. What I kind of do is, when I feel that, I instantly do something to make sure that conversation happens, whether it's sending an email or a text to schedule the appointment, or whether it's dealing with it right on the spot, making a call. Kind of the whole speed of implementation thing, the quicker I can just take some sort of action to put me in a position where that conversation or that meeting or that whatever is inevitable. That advice was passed down to me by my parents when I was a lot younger. And I didn't take their advice. I learned the hard way. And sometimes when you try to figure things out on your own, you got to use your judgment, I think, and you got to, you know, use your gut and your intuition. But generally speaking, when you know you need to have a conversation with someone, the quicker you can have it, the better. And I think when you just tell people, shoot them straight, speak from the heart and tell them what's really going on, it might not be good. They might not enjoy it, but I think they'll appreciate it. And so I'm happy to hear you say that, man, because, you know, being a couple hundred thousand dollars in the hole and having those conversations, I mean, that must've been gut wrenching for you.
Oh yeah. It's, the book, I guess Brian Tracy wrote it, Eat That Frog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just do what you don't do, the most uncomfortable, most impactful thing first.
Right.
And, like you mentioned, you had that conversation before the call. That means you had it in the morning.
And that's right.
That way it didn't end up at you all day. And sometimes it's not even a conversation with somebody else as much as a conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Great point.
You could probably put that on the calendar too. Meeting with thyself.
That's right. That's right. No, there's a lot of wisdom in that. So, I mean, you're coaching 23 people now. What are some of the common mistakes? And we don't have to name any names, but just what are some general common mistakes that you see a lot of investors make, whether they're new getting started or there's a lot of, you know, seasoned pros that listen to the show, even the more experienced ones, if you can maybe pick out a few that, that people can avoid.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's without a doubt consistency.
Okay.
Again, if you have me as a coach, you know exactly what you need to do. You have exactly what you need to have. Depending on your marketing strategy, you have every resource. Like if you're sending out mail, you know exactly how to get the data. You know exactly what types of data, and you know exactly what mailers to send and who to use and how much it's going to cost. If it's on MLS, you already have a realtor handed to you, and you can go get others, and you have an offer package. You have what you need to have, and you know exactly what you need to know because that's all we talk about. And that's in the videos, and that's on our coaching calls. The challenge is I'm seeing people who are lacking results, or at least lacking results to their own standard. I see them out at events. I see them traveling, and then I see them coming back to me in frustration.
Yeah.
And to me, you can find deals for free at no marketing dollars. And I design coaching around the 9 to 5, somebody with like a 9 to 5, so they can afford me. So at the same time, I have to design their marketing plan with them to be 1 to 2 hours a day, maybe on average. I say 7 to 10 hours a week, and you can go out there and, easily flip 3 houses in your first year. And that's not much to ask. If you're really dedicated to this, I mean, right. I guess there's a difference between committed and interested.
Totally.
If you're truly committed to this, then give me 7 to 10 hours a week of focus, because your 7 to 10 hours a week isn't going to include you on Bigger Pockets or learning and researching. It's not going to include you on Google. It's not going to include you doing anything other than submitting offers, because you know what you need to know and you have what you need to have.
Yeah.
So, I'm quite frankly, it eats at me because I look at others and I'm like, you know what? I carry a burden of you haven't reached the pinnacle of success that you're expecting at this point in time. And I take that personally, whereas I could do a quick audit of your time, whether that means I'm looking at your calendar, I'm looking at your Facebook, Instagram, and I can immediately identify a plethora of hours that if you just gave me your focus during those hours, you would have the deals. And ultimately, that's what success separates those who are successful or not, in at least my coaching communities. And same with me. For example, when I changed the focus to getting the flips again, I just did some simple things. And this is very tactical. What I did was I reached out to my wholesaler relationships in my local market and my realtor relationships in my local market. And I put them on a touch campaign where I'm reaching out to them every Monday, once a week, and it's like 26 people, I think, on my list. And they're my top deal finders. They're like kind of my inner circle, those I'm building relationships with or I've built relationships with. And I'm simply staying top of mind, and I'm asking about their pipeline to see if they're going to shoot me something on the fly. And I go by, I can get you an offer in 5 minutes. So I tell somebody, hey, you got anything in the pipeline? I'll get you an offer in 5 minutes. Doesn't cost me any money. It's something I just do on Mondays for an hour or two. And that starts to snowball. And if somebody just did that simple strategy with realtors and wholesalers locally, it costs you nothing. It's less than 10 hours a week, and you're going to come out on top, no doubt.
You know why though? Because of what you said, how you started this part of the show is consistency. And that's what most people lack, is they're consistently inconsistent.
Yeah. And I often look at like what holds somebody back. And I know for me, I mean, sometimes it's what's on the other side. It's like, well, shoot, I'm just gonna become more busy or take on more risk. Mm-hmm. And then when you can kind of get over that, you can feel the momentum again. And once you get one, you build up your confidence, and 2, 3, 4, and 5 are easier, whether that means you're brand new or that means you're relaunching or that means your goal for February. The momentum is going to be pretty powerful. And then you start leveraging it, right? So like I get a flip and I start posting it all over social media. I do walkthroughs, that gets me more deals. It's just the snowball effect.
That's right.
And I believe they can be out, you can get them for free. So all it just comes down to consistency.
I love it. I love it. Anything else come to mind for you as far as, you know, when you think about the 23 people or so that you're coaching, anything else that you would say, hey, this is a common pitfall that I see new and or experienced investors make that we need to kind of look out for?
Yeah. I mean, other than consistency of the, of lead generation, whether it's lead generation for deals or lead generation for private capital to pair with hard money lending so that they don't have any skin in the game or capital in the game. Mm-hmm. The focus and the consistency in lead gen, I would say another thing is shiny object syndrome.
Shiny object syndrome. Oh yeah.
It's killing them. I mean, it kills me at times. So if we pick a marketing plan and you buy into it, it's going to take time. It's similar. Like, okay, so if you know mail better than the best of them, how many months should one commit to a mailing campaign?
Oh man. So we don't do a mailing campaign unless we're sending at least 7 to 10 pieces. So it's for us, it's not so many months, but we do it every 30 days.
Okay. So in this example, 7 to 10 months.
Yeah.
And that's what I have to consistently remind them of. I don't care what you're doing. If you're texting, I mean, I got to remind myself, like I'm ready to sometimes just stop texting, but I'm like, well, shoot, I've only been doing it for 3 months. I mean, what do you expect to get leads flying at the wazoo after 3 months of mailing?
Right, right.
So it's the same with if you're submitting offers through your realtors or sourcing deals from your wholesalers. It takes time to build the relationships and to get lucky. And
that's right.
That's something I have to remind them because they want to shift gears. And then we look at like, man, you've only been at this for 4.5 months. I mean,
right.
Give yourself a break. I mean, you started at nothing. You didn't even have an LLC.
You know what I find though, Brenton, is that number one, you know, we live in a microwave society. You know, people want instant results and many people aren't willing to put in the work that it takes to get to where you are, to get to where I am. And that's with a lot of mistakes and a lot of brain damage in the process. And I think also, you know, social media is so powerful and you can be a creator in social media, you can be a consumer. I find most people are consumers. Most people are on Facebook and Instagram and they're scrolling and they're looking at other people's success. And I put that in quotes because whether it's perceived success or actual success, and they don't see what it actually took to get to that point. They might see the Lamborghini or they might see the check or they might see the whatever, but they didn't see the blood, sweat, and tears that went into that. You know, so I mentioned that because I think people need to be cautioned by that. I think people need to realize that you're on your own journey and, you know, success doesn't come without putting in the work. And you got to work hard, yes, but you also have to work smart.
I agree. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. So brother, let me ask you this, man, what is stopping you? Where are you going moving forward? What's the vision and what's stopping you from being the best version of yourself?
Well, clearly what stops me from being the best version of myself is myself all day long.
Elaborate.
Well, it comes down to, either I'm going to be the one to focus or not. I'm going to be consistent or not. I'm going to follow what I'm learning, whether it's in coaching with Ascend or out in the outer world or up in here. So no doubt I live in a very accountable world and, it all falls on me. So, I'd say where I'm going is I'm really attempting to pound in my head addition by subtraction.
Okay.
So less ideas, less shiny objects, stick with the bread and butter. I mean, for me, coaching has a lot of fulfillment and, can be very lucrative. And then the flipping has the same feelings. So, I mean, you could flip 3 houses for, say, 30,000. I'm sorry, flip 5 houses for 30,000. There's 150. You can coach. I mean, how much more do you really need outside of those 2 vehicles while you're working on the rental portfolio? Mm-hmm. So I'm actually like selling off some rentals to get rid of the ones that are the headaches, takes profits off the table to pay for my losing projects and properties. So like shrinking the portfolio, which is a big takeaway from our mastermind. So that's addition by subtraction. And then so it's adding to my life. I'm giving me some more time back. And then for me, it's flipping a handful a year. It's delivering coaching and it's working on the rental portfolio and getting better and better at making that more profitable and less time intensive.
Yep.
And that's it outside of turning the corner of getting married, kids.
That's the fun part. That's the fun part, man. And Mackenzie's, she's beautiful and she's an awesome person. I couldn't be happier for both of you. And I see that she is now a licensed realtor, right?
She is. She's kicking butt already, actually. In her first month, she has 4 signed clients. And
so awesome.
She's got almost a million under contract. She's crushing it. She falls into she's in a great family. Her parents are realtors and her mom left behind a great legacy. And she took her mom's place inside the real estate business and is just crushing it. So she'll be doing really well. And we'll be talking about a staging company, which is more up her passion alley. Yep, and then
I remember
she wants to work like in between parenting rather than parent in between work. Yeah. So we're going to be focusing on that here soon. So kind of we're grinding until we don't have to and we can settle down a little bit.
I love it, man. Progress, not perfection. Keep moving forward. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah, man, I'm honored to know you and be a friend and just have you a part of our group because it truly is inspiring, man. And whether you know it or not, somebody or multiple people are going to hear this interview and they're going to be inspired by, you know, what you've done at such a young age and where you're going. And aside from that, just the mindset you have. That's why, you know, mindset is one of those things you want to be working on and sharpening on a daily basis. Because we both fall, you know, you were self-aware 20 minutes ago to catch yourself and say like, I suck at that or something like that, but you were aware of it. I just want to publicly acknowledge you, my friends. Let me ask you one last question and get you out of here on this. 26 years old, you got started at 19, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
So rewind the clock 7 years. What do you wish? What's the one piece of advice you would have shared with the 19-year-old Brenton Hess? And it could be about business or it could be about life.
Yeah, I'm a real tactical guy. So I'm going to go straight to like business. and like all bias aside, so I clearly coach and mentor and it's their first 3 flips. And we split the profits 50-50. It's hyper-local. And I have a few out-of-state clients that I take on maybe sometimes if they're the right fit. And that's what I wish I would have told myself is, hey, listen, instead of getting comfortable with somebody, get uncomfortable and pay somebody. Take on the accountability yourself. When you're paying somebody, you are accountable to them to go out there and get results and get an ROI on your money. So yeah. I would have wished I would have found somebody who's doing what I'm doing as far as coaching. And it would have been the perfect model to join because I paid for the same amount for coaching. I just didn't have them in the field. And instead of giving a percentage of your LLC, I have somebody who's just a joint venture on 3 deals and it's my company, my brand, and I can run wild forever.
There you go.
And they give me way more than a lot of other coaching models. So it might seem like a shameless plug, but I really firmly believe that my trajectory would be much different if I got uncomfortable from the beginning with somebody who knew what they were doing.
Yep.
Because when I was handed capital, you know, those are the good years, 2013, 2014, and we were flipping 1 house at a time, 2 houses at a time, because I didn't understand how to buy more and leverage more. Those are the years I should have really been making my mistakes. So that's what I wish I would have done differently. And I don't know who's listening to this at this point in time, whether you're young or old, but I think it applies to all ages.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, man. So tell people, how do they reach out to you? How do they have a conversation or connect with you and let them know what market you're in case anybody potentially wants to work with you and or do deals?
Yes, I'm in the Maryland market and you can reach me. The best place is on social media, Facebook and Instagram. And my name is simply my first name and last name. So Brenton, B-R-E-N-T-I-N, Hess, H-E-S-S. So at Brenton Hess. And sending me a direct message, I will always reply. It probably won't be the same day. I will always reply. And then you can always email me, which is Brenton@BrentonHess.com.
Awesome. And as always, my friends, we will have all those resources, all of Brenton's contact information in the show notes page. And, you know, I encourage you to take something from this show, implement it in your life, implement it in your business. I encourage you to reach out to Brenton. Great guy. He's obviously going places. And so, my friend, I look forward to spending some time here with you next week. And I'm just excited about, you know, where you're going and watching you live your vision.
Thank you, Alex. I really appreciate you. I'm honored to have been on the podcast and I'm looking forward to hopefully this impacting some people and definitely hanging out with you and showing you what I'm made of at Topgolf or whatever, wherever we're going.
So it's Drive Shack and you're going to get smoked, my friend. I'm going to take you out.
I am very much looking forward to that.
All right, man.
And the mastermind. Awesome.
There you go. Yeah, and the mastermind, right? So appreciate you, my friend. I will talk to you soon. And thank you so much for tuning in, for listening to the show. You are the reason I do this. You are the reason I'm always striving to bring people like Brenton on the podcast to share what's working and what's not working, because I think we can learn from both. So I think the way you can repay Brenton and I is just take something you heard here today and apply it. Speed of implementation. So I love you. I appreciate you. And I will connect with you on the next one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.